I'm Karen Florin, and this is the Storyline Podcast. Today we're here with Day staff writer Erica Moser. This past Sunday, Moser wrote a story about critical race theory. The headline read, "Critical Race Theory Has Proved Divisive. What is it?" We call this type of story an explainer because it answers a question that many people have. Erica, welcome, and would you do us the favor of defining critical race theory to the best of your ability?
Hi, thanks for having me. So I'll start with, I'm obviously not an expert at all on this, and Karen, as you've said before, I try and talk to the experts, that's my job. So I will start with how a law professor who actually teaches a course called Critical Race Theory has defined it. So I spoke with Quinnipiac University School of Law professor Angela Robinson, and she said that critical race theory started with a group of lawyers and law professors who came up kind of with sort of two principles, that race is a social construct and that, quote, racism is pervasive in our society because we really haven't unpacked the effect of race. So the origins of critical race theory date to the 1970s, 80s, kind of one of the one of the people who is considered the forefathers of critical race theory is the late Harvard Law School professor Derrick Bell. So if you want to read more from experts, I would recommend Derrick Bell, Richard Delgado, Kimberly Crenshaw are kind of some of the big names in critical race theory. And another thing that Professor Angela Robinson said was critical race theory says that systems are designed to get the results they get. And so if we are continually having racial disparities, which we have in wealth and education and health outcomes, that must be because there is something in the system that is continually producing those results.
Would you tell us about the discussions that led to you reporting and writing this story?
Yeah, so I am someone who loves doing, as you mentioned, explanatory journalism. You know, if there's a topic that has really spiked in the public conversation and public consciousness, I want to really look into it and say, what does this mean? Why are people talking about this? And so we had a news meeting recently. And admittedly, I kind of casually threw out there, like, oh, I could do an explainer on critical race theory like I did for Defund the Police. And then a few days later, I'm like, what have I done? What have I gotten myself into? Because it's such a complicated subject. And over, it was really just a few days that I spent a lot of time working on this article. And I ended up just over the course of a few days with, you know, more than 50 pages of written notes. So it's a lot to pull through, and there's still a lot more I want to do.
And can you get a little bit deeper into how you reported the story?
Yeah, so this, as a jumping off point, I really wanted to start off with, again, what is critical race theory and why are people talking about it? Why have we been hearing this phrase so much now on the news, in different news articles kind of floating around? And so knowing that critical race theory had its origins in law schools and in academia, I really wanted to talk to people who have been familiar with this theory and this term for years and could talk about, you know, what it actually is, so that then when we see people are calling things critical race theory, we could then say, okay, is that actually critical race theory? So I spoke with multiple different professors, I think seven professors in Connecticut. And, you know, as a local newspaper, I wanted to get Connecticut people. So I talked to some people from UConn, Quinnipiac, University of New Haven, some others. And I had also watched that Southern Connecticut State University held a critical race theory teach-in virtually in October. So I watched that as well. I also kind of on the side for people who have been more critical, I watched a forum that Representative Kimberly Fiorello held. I spoke with Senator Rob Sampson. So those are both Republicans who are among the few that I know of in Connecticut in terms of state legislators who have been talking about critical race theory and been critical of it, or at least critical of how they perceive it.
Can you tell us some of the steps that you took to keep this story very objective, knowing it's such a divisive topic?
Yeah. So to keep this article objective, I think, kind of as I was saying, I did really want to dig into just what is critical race theory from a factual standpoint of what that is. I wasn't really getting into what I think of critical race theory. And I did also want to make sure that, along with including people who you know, teach critical race theory or rather incorporate it into their curriculum at the college level and, you know, have really talked about the merits of it, I did want to explain what the concerns were and where they're coming from, and but also be very factual and accurate about whether or not those concerns actually are critical race theory. And some of that, though, I will say is that's something the reader can tell reading the article, that if you see the explanation of what critical race theory is and then how someone else is interpreting it, that's something that I kind of lay out the facts and the reader can sort of see that for themselves. And I think part of what was really interesting here that I learned while reporting this story was a bit more about this man, Christopher Rufo. And so he is someone who is now a senior fellow at the Conservative Manhattan Institute for Policy Research. And he really is the person who kind of orchestrated the conflict, I would say, over critical race theory, that is really the person who brought it into the public attention. And so this goes back to last year, you know, back, you know, when President Trump was still in office, Christopher Rufo was on Tucker Carlson Tonight talking about critical race theory. And then after that, President Trump's chief of staff reached out to him and invited him to the White House. And Christopher Rufo was part of drafting this executive order on, quote unquote, divisive concepts, which is also what Senator Rob Sampson introduced in Connecticut. And one thing I had found was Christopher Rufo tweeted in March, "We have successfully frozen their brand, critical race theory, into the public conversation and are steadily driving up negative perceptions. We will eventually turn it toxic as we put all of the various cultural insanities under that brand category." So that was really showing what he was doing, and you could sort of follow that step by step. And what was really interesting, too, was The New Yorker wrote a profile of him called "How a Conservative Activist Invented the Conflict Over Critical Race Theory." And Christopher Rufo tweeted that out and called it accurate, fair, and thoughtful. And he pretty much thought that the term "invented" was fairly accurate. He didn't really refute the term "invented" in that headline.
You have said that this one story really is just the beginning of your reporting. And in fact, having listened to some of those discussions on you taking on this story, you were hesitant to write about it so quickly because you really wanted to dive in. I know that you plan now to dive in. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and you're right. I was a bit hesitant at first just because it is such a complicated topic, and my editors were stressing, and I did, you know, eventually agree that because this term is being discussed so much right now, we did feel it was important to get something out now just explaining what this is and why people are using this phrase a lot. But my article is very theoretical, and I do want to get more into the practical implications in southeastern Connecticut, because I really didn't in my article answer whether or not this is being taught at all in schools. The professors I talked to kind of were skeptical of that and saying, you know, I doubted it, that it is really kind of a college level theory. But I didn't get into whether or not it's being taught in K-12 schools, or just more broadly, how is race being taught, and how is Black history and Native American history and Latino history being taught in schools. So going forward, I really want to dive into that a lot more, hopefully do some Freedom of Information Act requests to districts and see. I mean, I'm really curious about what letters and emails all of our local districts have gotten about critical race theory or the 1619 Project or how to be an anti-racist, white fragility, and even back to what we were hearing a lot more of last summer. Kind of on the other hand, we've heard a lot of concerns about what isn't being taught. And I do want to hear from parents and students about how they have learned about Black history and Latino history, as I mentioned, in schools, and what they haven't learned, what they feel they should be learning. And especially now we have the state is requiring Black and Latino studies curriculum for schools. And I want to research more, okay, what does that look like? And we've also seen a lot over the past year of new diversity, equity, and inclusion committees and discussions around that. And I want to see kind of what some of the different professional development and training entails. So I definitely have my work cut out for me here of all the things that I want to learn about.
Well, thanks for that first, you know, that first explanatory piece. It got us off the ground on a really important topic. Just as your explainer on defunding the police did last year. And I remember that you wrote some explainer stories during the coronavirus. Could you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, that was something. There was a few stories I wrote about the pandemic throughout of trying to dive into a particular issue. There was one that I wrote pretty early on that was explaining, you know, why we were reacting the way we were reacting so early on to the pandemic and kind of when everything shut down. I wrote about, you know, what does flattening the curve mean, or rather what is the historical context of social distancing? That's what I wrote about. You know, what does social distancing mean, and what is the scientific and historical context behind that? And I had written also about the concept of herd immunity, and that would come with, I think the quote was, an enormous potential human toll, and writing about why herd immunity was not really a feasible strategy, so to speak, to get out of the pandemic. So those were a few COVID-19 explainers that I had written, and that was really interesting to learn more about a lot of the science. And I would really nerd out in some of these articles as I'm on Google Scholar and going through all of these medical journals and science journals and reading a bunch of journal articles was really interesting.
By the way, the last time that you were on the storyline, I think you were talking about maybe a story you'd written on the vaccine or a coronavirus-related issue, and you said you had interviewed about 34 people. So we are pleased that we can turn to you when we need, you know, explanatory pieces on these important subjects. You're really becoming a master at doing these. Is there anything else that you would like to add as you embark on your further reporting of critical race theory?
Just that, as I had mentioned at the bottom of my article, I'd love to talk to more people about how they feel about how race is or isn't being taught in their school or their children's school. So if you want to talk, feel free to email me. I'm at e.moser@theday.com.
Great. And if you'd like to find Erica's story on theday.com, I just looked it up really quickly. I did a search of critical race theory and Moser. It came right up. Thank you so much for coming, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for having me.